Good morning and welcome to Sunday Sunrise. Special show today. We're talking to Larry Solomon. He's the clinical director of the Calvary Center, and we'll get into what the Calvary Center is. And he's also the author of Love Never Fails, But Marriage Can. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Carla. Thank you.
What's the Calvary Center?
Well, the Calvary Center has kind of been a well-kept secret in the Phoenix area. We've actually been around since 1964. And we're a 30-day residential program, treat drug and alcohol addiction, and recently we have just opened a program for gamblers, problem gamblers. This is one of the only treatment programs for gambling in the area. There's just a few in the nation for problem gamblers. I think at this point in time, the nearest one is Shreveport, Louisiana, for residential problem gambling.
You cover all aspects of addiction then, not just gambling, other addictions as well?
Chemical dependency, drug and alcohol, and gambling.
What can someone expect going in?
Well, 30-day residential treatment, it's a pretty intense treatment program. When you come in, you go through intake, a personalized treatment plan is made for you, and you're assigned a primary therapist. They go through and create your treatment plan, and then you just participate in the daily routines, two lectures a day, small groups. We have our 12-step meetings, big book, and Bible studies. One of the aspects about Calvary Center is we have both a faith-based and a traditional 12-step program. When the person comes in, they can choose whichever track they want to use.
You're catering to both sides.
Absolutely.
Great. Just the addiction itself, it's obviously an illness. What kind of support do you give for people that have addictions?
Well, a person that suffers addiction kind of suffers a split personality. There's a part of them that wants to achieve life and get happiness and have a purpose in life. But then there's that addiction side that just wants what it wants when it wants it, to get the pleasure over the pain at all points in time. So we help the person recognize that dual personality and to make the emotional, spiritual, cognitive, and behavioral changes to try to live that life that they really want to live.
Tips for our listeners this morning that maybe personally they are struggling with a problem, or friend or family member struggling with a problem with addiction. What are some great tips that a listener right now can take from the show today?
If your drinking is causing problems, you have a problem with drinking. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one way to look at this is if you're a family member, look at your loved one's behavior and ask yourself, do normal people do this? For example, if somebody's wife was to walk into the bathroom, lift up the toilet tank, and take out a carton of milk and drink three swigs off of it and put it back and hide it, you'd think she was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But we see alcoholics drink like this all the time.
Right.
And we kind of think, well, I guess that's just normal. So some of your guides are, is it causing problems? And do normal people do that? Mm-hmm. If you've ever embarrassed someone who's taking a drink, you know, you turn the corner and they have a drink in their hand and they try to hide it, they have a problem. If you know anybody that hides bottles, they have a problem.
Recognizing that and not just pushing it aside, saying, quote unquote, oh, that's a normal activity.
Right, or it's just a phase we're going through, or it's about my nerves.
Yeah, making the person be accountable and getting through the denial stage, per se, right?
Right.
Confrontational. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, are defensive about it, have excuses and whatnot. Explain trying not to be too confrontational with the person.
People are very protective of their addiction. It becomes their God. It becomes their wife. It becomes their everything. Mm-hmm. And once a person is really pulled into the throes of addiction, it's the most important thing in their life. Mm-hmm. It's more important than eating. It's more important than work. So naturally, they're going to be very protective of it.
They kind of revolve their life around that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would absolutely say that. The national statistics say that an active addict or alcoholic spends 87% of their conscious thought on the drug or the alcohol. Now, sometimes that's about obtaining it. Sometimes it's about how much to use. It's about don't use too much. It's about how do I cover it up with mm-hmm. Visines or, you know, breath mints. How do I shuffle the money? If I'm going on vacation, how am I going to keep a supply? How am I going to keep that hidden? 87% of conscious thought.
That's almost to the level of being paranoid about it. You know, just like thinking about it all the time and can't get your mind off of it.
It's a total obsession.
Yeah.
It really is. So if you consider that, of course a person is going to be very protective of their addiction. People go through phases when they get into an addiction. Nobody wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to be an alcoholic today. Okay. It starts off probably as a teenager going to parties, and it's fun. But then you go into the next phase where it becomes a habit. And a lot of people will say things like, I had a rough day, I need a drink. And what you start to do is you start associating coping, dealing with stress, life, anxieties. You start associating that with a chemical or the gambling. It just starts to become a habit. A lot of people go out. Well, I can't dance until I have a couple of drinks. Mm-hmm. Got to loosen up.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There's the fun phase. Then you slip into it's kind of a habit for coping phase. And then somewhere, and nobody can tell where, you slip into that full-blown addiction. Using no longer gives you pleasure. Using is a survival mechanism. Because if you don't use, you feel horrible. At this point in time, using doesn't get you high, fun, or anything else. It just kind of makes you feel normal. If you can imagine, that's kind of like confronting someone about breathing. You know, you need to stop breathing. Well, you got to be kidding me. So direct confrontation for somebody that's in that full-blown addiction stage won't work. Somebody that's in the it's fun stage, or maybe they're using it as a coping mechanism, a little more direct confrontation of, hey, I'm really concerned about you, you're drinking too much, you know, let's see if we can get you some help. That may work. But if the person is full-blown addiction, you know, you don't want to ignore the problem. Mm-hmm. But if you directly confront them, you know, where's the money? You've been drinking. You're going to drive that person further into their addiction. You're going to actually make them get more secretive.
Reverse effect of you trying to help them, they go the opposite direction even further.
Right. And addicts get really good at protecting it. They'll try something, and if they get caught or confronted, well, they'll try something new so they don't get caught again.
In the full needs to happen, or professional needs to come in and help the situation then at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. And we do refer a couple of interventionists. One goes across the country and one's here local. And oftentimes intervention's definitely necessary. Family has trouble setting the boundaries. I mean, they love their addict, but they don't like the addiction. Family has trouble, you know, what's the right move to make?
They want to make the right decision, they just don't know how. And a lot of families I know try and do as much research on the topic as possible so they understand what that other person is going through. It's so easy for a person that's not addicted to just say, stop it.
Right.
Just stop doing it.
Exactly.
And you don't really understand that person's side of it, that I don't think sometimes they're meaning to hurt other people. It's just the fact that they're addicted to something.
It's very rare that someone sets out to hurt another person. Yeah. Behavior is always driven by my needs, my emotional needs. And because an addict has so often gone to the chemical to address their emotional needs, that's all they know. It's about me just trying to feel better about myself, even if it's just for 30 seconds. Yeah. I just want to feel better about myself. It's really no intent to hurt someone else, but there's collateral damage and people get hurt just because of my behavior.
The third tip, what's making it uncomfortable for someone else?
Okay, here's where we don't directly confront, okay? This is where, and this is the hardest thing for families to do. Interventionists can help here. You want to attack the addiction through the environment as opposed to directly confronting the person. So you do some pretty difficult things. You change locks. You let them suffer consequences. If they get arrested for a third DUI, you don't bail them out. If they get in financial straits, their car is going to get repossessed, they're going to get fired, you let them do it.
And that is hard for a family member.
You
bet. You're seeing that person suffer.
Right. And family, you know, family, one thing, that the number one priority of a family is the survival and safety of their loved one. It's kind of hard to differentiate sometimes short-term survival, okay, let's get them off the street today, versus the long-term survival. If he doesn't spend some time on the street, he's not going to be motivated to change. You know, when we get into that dual personality of the addiction, the real person that has a purpose in life, that wants to achieve their dreams, occasionally will come to surface inside that person, but usually the addiction or the addict personality is in charge of that person. When an addict is suffering some consequences, whether they be physical or financial or they're stuck in jail, the real personality starts to come out and say, what am I doing? If you bail them out too soon, the real person doesn't emerge long enough for them to be motivated to change. Okay? Person gets a DUI. They go to jail for 2 hours. Family comes and bails them out, pays the attorney fees. Yeah, they're inconvenienced for a little while. For a normal person, that's usually motivation to change.
Right. Okay? Yeah, absolutely.
For an addict, they will drive without a license. They will drink and drive without a license. Until the pain of my addiction outweighs the rewards of the addiction, I'm not going to be motivated to change. So family has to make the environment very uncomfortable for the addiction. But there's a balance here. You want to let the person know you love them, but you hate the addiction. You can't come to family functions because you always come bloated. You're welcome here, your addiction's not. I mean, you want to separate the person from the behavior and let them know you support them so that when they do suffer some consequences, the real personality inside of them that has purpose and has hope knows that they're loved and supported. When the consequence gets just too much, they will go ask for that help.
Is that kind of like the rock bottom, would you say?
You could call it that,
okay.
Yeah. It's hard to do this, but the families sometimes need to help push them to the bottom. Because if you make any aspect of addiction comfortable, you're going to prolong it. If I'm out on the street and I come home and I beg to come back in and the family lets me in, okay, for a couple of hours on the street, I was uncomfortable, but now I'm back in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm comfy and cozy, and then the addictive personality is likely to just kind of start taking over. I'll give you an example. We had a client one time, and he was like a 19, 20-year-old. Exact same situation. He went home after being on the street for quite a while, and he knocked on the door at 10 o'clock at night asking his parents if he could come in. His parents handed him a sleeping bag, a bottle of water, and a Pop-Tart and said, "Sleep outside, and if you're still here in the morning, we'll take you to treatment." And the next morning, he did go to Calvary Center.
Family deciding to make the choice that they're not going to give in to the addiction, confronting it.
Right. Moms really have trouble doing this,
yeah.
You know, because
it's the nurturing factor,
right.
And they don't want to see their family member in pain.
And it's really hard for a person to see, are they nurturing that addict personality, or are they nurturing the real loving person that wants to get back into life and have that hope and purpose. And this can go on for weeks or months, and family has to be very, you know, consistent, making the environment uncomfortable.
Does it really depend on the person or the personality as far as more of the strong-willed people prolong the process, you know, months? Because they're like, no, I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to give up.
They certainly can do that.
Yeah.
They'll hold on for a long time. We have people come to Calvary that have been to a dozen treatments before. You know, they're pretty hardcore. Whether or not we can help them achieve the recovery that they need, not sure. I mean, we're certainly love to have them and love to give them a shot.
So you kind of give them the tools, and then it's a personal choice as far as if they're going to use those tools to help themselves in the end.
Right. And, you know, recovery is a pursuit of trying to find my purpose and my peace and my spirituality in life. It's not just denying. Put the plug in the jug and go to meetings doesn't work for most people, okay? And normal people can't understand this, but it would be kind of like your average person swearing off chocolate.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
You could do it for a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
Okay? But every time you see it, you got to make this conscious decision, oh, no, I can't do that. And denying yourself, eventually it catches up with you. So what you do is you pursue a life of recovery as opposed to just trying to say no to drugs.
The recovery process. How do you make it so it's the easiest, quote-unquote, for a person to go through recovery?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the easiest. I will tell you it's difficult.
Yeah.
Staying in your addiction is easier in the short term, but you're going to pay the consequences in the long term. Recovery, difficult in the short term, but very rewarding in the long term. For family members at this point, while you've made the environment very uncomfortable for the addiction, what you want to do is you want to make a recovery choice very attractive, okay? So that if your loved one comes to you and says, okay, I give up, I'm ready for help, okay, here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to pay for your treatment. We're going to help you get into the halfway house for the first month. You know, we'll help you financially. As long as you're doing recovery, we're going to support you. The second you go back to addiction, we're going to pull the plug. And it's got to be that black and white. One of the things that we do at Calvary is offer a family weekend. On Friday afternoon, it's just the family members, the loved ones that are in Calvary are not in there. And I will ask, okay, what did it take to get your loved one into treatment? And it takes the following. Suicide attempts, jail, foreclosures, divorces, threats from family, being kicked out, all finances cut off. Consistently, everybody in the room had to come to these kind of a drastic consequences. If your loved one relapses, let's say they go to treatment, and then they relapse. You want to set it up so that all the above happens instantly. The foreclosures, the divorces, the threats, Because that's what took to get them into recovery in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's what it's going to take to get them into recovery if they have a relapse in the future.
How do you avoid someone relapsing? How do you avoid the process of possibly them having to go into treatment over and over and over and over again? Is there any one reason why that happens or how you avoid it?
Well, there's one reason and there's a million reasons. I mean, that's a tough question to answer because addiction is a hard thing to figure out. In essence, somebody that's serious about recovery, the reason they relapse is because little by little they stop working towards recovery. They'll cut out on their meetings. They'll get a little too stressed out. They won't keep their life balanced. And then they let all these little straws build up on their back until eventually they have a relapse. That's your person that's serious about recovery. Now, if somebody really has in the back of the mind that they're going to go use, they're going to go use. Family has to understand, you didn't cause it. You couldn't stop it. You can't prevent it. You can't make it happen again either. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that family worries about is, gee, I don't want to say anything that's going to cause them to go out and use.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay, if they use, that's their choice. Family also kind of swings the pendulum the other way, and sometimes they think, okay, I'm going to control every aspect of this, of my loved one's recovery. I'm going to pick their meetings. I'm going to drive them to their meetings. I'm going to cook their meals for them. I'm going to tuck them in bed at 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to lock the windows. They tend to go one extreme or the other.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do the family member any good, either one of those. You're walking on eggshells in one case. You're in total, have the illusion you're in total control in the other.
How do you take care of yourself? How do you make a plan for the future?
Okay. One of the most important things family can do is take care of themselves. Now, what I mean by that is look at your spirituality, your emotional health, your mental health, and your physical health. The premise of the book, Love Never Fails But a Marriage Can, the whole premise of that book is the best thing I can do for my spouse is be as healthy as I can be in those four aspects, spiritual, emotional, mental, and behavioral. Because if I'm in as good a condition as I can be in, that takes pressure off my wife. She doesn't have to pick up the slack or anything. And it's the same with family in dealing with an addiction. You've got the guideline of make the environment uncomfortable, make recovery attractive, but then that's it. You've done your work. And just be prepared to take care of yourself. Because you want to be in as healthy as you can be so that if your loved one comes to you in that moment of desperation and says, I'm ready for help, you are as healthy as you can be so that you can make the best decision for them at that point in time. Self-care, you know, that's what recovery is about as well, is taking care of yourself in those four aspects of your life.
Going over just a little bit more of the Calvary Center, someone that's possibly interested, there's the website, which is calvarycenter.com, and just kind of some other aspects of the center that you'd like to share.
Sure. Interestingly enough, we're just getting known in Phoenix, even though we've been here for 43 years. A lot of our clients are from out of state. Somewhere in the range of 75% to 80%. So you can either visit the website or you can call our 800 number, 866-76-SOBER, and get information. And Calvary wants to be a resource. I mean, if we're not the place to get help, you know, as far as a 30-day residential treatment, we do have other things. We have a family group that meets every Wednesday night. We have the family weekend that meets every fourth week. And we can be a resource to maybe get you some help somewhere else, even if we're not the right place.
Many areas and resources to seek help.
Absolutely.
And like you said, there's the various addictions, including alcoholism. What are some other?
Substance abuse and gambling. The other addictions that are, I mean, you can be addicted to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that rules your life, you can be addicted to.
Very true.
Calvary specifically sticks to substance abuse, which is drugs and alcohol, and to problem gambling. There's eating disorders and workaholics and all of these other that definitely, you know, could benefit from some resources but may not be totally appropriate to be admitted for residential treatment at Calvary.
Absolutely. It's kind of a reminder because you watch the news, you see even these celebrities going through all these issues as far as addiction and whatnot. And it's just nice to know that you see this in the media, but it kind of helps you personally say, oh my gosh, am I going through a situation like this? Or do I know someone that has a problem like this? And hopefully today's show somehow, out of all the information we gave the listeners today, something hopefully clicks and, hey, you know, I think this might be a problem.
Sure hope so. Everybody knows somebody that's affected by drugs or alcohol or gambling.
Larry, what are some other areas that people can seek help? There's other organizations and whatnot besides the Calvary Center, right?
Sure. If a family member is looking for help, there's 12-step programs for family members. Al-Anon is an example. And you can find an Al-Anon meeting. That's A-L-A-N-O-N. You can find them in the white pages. You can find them on the web. They're basically 12-step meetings for family members and friends of people that are chemically dependent.
They're not only helping the person that has the addiction, they're helping the people that are surrounded by that person and helping them kind of understand what that person's going through with the addiction. Right?
And how to best help the addict. It's a lot of what we've talked about today. You can't control what they do. You can't stop them from drinking or using, but you can make it so uncomfortable that they're motivated to stop. Okay, so it kind of supports a lot of the things we've talked about today. Now, if we have a family member of a gambler, mm-hmm. Okay, there is a program for them. It's called Gammonon. And if you'll look that up, it's Gam-Anon. You will find them on the web. You might find them in the white pages, but definitely on the internet. And it's exactly what Al-Anon is for chemically dependent. It's for family and friends of problem gamblers. And again, they will give you some help as to how to deal with gambling.
Okay.
And it's a kind of a whole other ball game there. One other thing that I think the community resource hotline right here in the Phoenix area, if you just look that up in the white pages, they can find you anything. It's a great resource. Say somebody has lost a loved one, okay, and they need a grief support group. If you look up that community resource hotline in your white pages, you'll give them your zip code and they will find you a support group in your area. So here locally, I mean, there are, you know, places families can turn to get some help.
Any support group for any problem, pretty much, right?
You bet. I mean, there's a support group for almost everything.
Okay. Let's just kind of go over an overview of the 5 tips that we covered today, the 5 tips on tackling addiction and what to do. The first one was don't ignore the problem.
Right. This is kind of how family members can help get a loved one the treatment that they need. Number one, don't ignore the problem. Sometimes we have a tendency to just kind of turn our head. We want to be in our own little denial. And, well, it's just a phase they're going through, or they're just going through a really tough time at work, or as soon as their taxes are paid, you know, he'll get out of this. We don't want to ignore the problem. We want to say, you know what, I'm really getting concerned here.
Number two is don't be overly confrontational.
There you're walking a line, mm-hmm. because, you know, when somebody is full-blown in their addiction, we talked about the phases of addiction where sometimes it's just fun. That's, you know, when somebody's first starting out with chemicals. It becomes a habit for them. They learn to just cope emotionally and de-stress with a chemical. And then they slip into that full-blown addiction where using doesn't even make them have fun anymore. It just makes them feel normal. Somebody that's in that full-blown addiction, you don't want to confront them directly because they're so good at that addiction that if they get confronted, they'll find a way to get around that the next time. So you drive them further underground with a direct confrontation. You're drinking. Where'd that money go? You know, that just makes them a smarter addict.
Right. And aggravates the situation probably even worse. Mm-hmm.
And if they're really inebriated, it can be dangerous.
Very true. Very true. Number three is make the addiction as uncomfortable as possible.
What we're doing here, making the addiction uncomfortable, is we're going after the addiction through the environment. So financial, social, occupational, legal environments, you want to just not help them or bail them out at all. We talked about that dual personality. Until the addiction becomes more painful than it is rewarding, the real personality of a person with purpose and hope isn't going to start taking over and saying, I got to make some changes. So this is the toughest spot. Tip number three, make the addiction uncomfortable because family has to let their loved ones suffer consequences. They've got to let them suffer them. Because if addiction is comfortable, why change?
Very true. Number four is make recovery as attractive as possible.
Four comes right after number three, but you're going to be making the addiction uncomfortable and making recovery attractive. You may be in these two spots for weeks or months, maybe possibly years. I mean, family has to understand that until the addict finally surrenders and says, I give up, they're not going to completely seek help. So you make recovery attractive. And here what you want to do is separate the individual from their addiction. You're welcome to the family functions. Your addiction's not. Therefore, you can't come. But if you get into recovery, we'll help you financially. We'll help you legally. We'll help you socially. We'll help you occupationally. We'll give you all the help that we can give you as long as you make a recovery choice and you stick with that recovery choice. So make addiction, make the environment very uncomfortable for them, but offer an offer that they can't refuse if they make healthy choices.
So the family support system is really crucial in helping someone through the addiction process, right?
I would absolutely say so. It's besides a person's relationship, you know, with God or their higher power as they see it in the traditional 12 steps, family is next.
And number 5, have a plan and take care of yourself.
Okay, once you've made that plan, you have your treatment center picked out. Let's just say it's Calvary. Check with us, make sure we have availability. Keep us updated on, you know, every few days as to the progress of your loved one. You know, as soon as your loved one is ready and they come to you and they say, okay, I give up, then get them in. Now, taking care of yourself is just really important because it's the best thing you can do for yourself and your family. By being healthy spiritually, mentally, behaviorally, and emotionally, you're ready to make good decisions when the crisis hits.
There's the 5 steps. Simply put, Larry Solomon, clinical director at the Calvary Center and author of Love Never Fails, But Marriage Can. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Carla.
For more information on the Calvary Center or any of the 5 tips that we have given today to confront addiction, you can visit calvarycenter.com. That's calvarycenter.com or 866-76-SOBER.